Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Fantasy Focus Football. They tape every morning, Monday through Friday, live on Twitter. Be sure to check it out if you're interested in the very best analysis in the game, or if you're just ashamed of how you did last year in your own league. You can download and subscribe to Fantasy Focus Football now, as well as The Right Time, wherever you get your podcast. The Right Time with Bomani Jones podcast is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we're going to talk about your man, Novak Djokovic, who, yep, he messed up. Also going to talk about what's going on in the NBA bubble. But first, ladies and gentlemen, we got football back. Gabe, did you watch any of the college football? Because I ain't watched none of the college football. I ain't just watching it because anybody out there.
Yeah, I'm not watching like Muskogee State against Big State U.
Yeah, I'm not that strung out, right? Like, I personally don't need it that bad. I understand that some of y'all love football in such a way where that's good enough for y'all. I wasn't doing it. I just need people to look at the college football and stop and think to themselves, hey, man, this season is not going to be what you think it is. Like, it is literally, we are going to be giving you any football that we can, right? And the reason I say that that is literally what it is going to be. Did you see this? I think it was in the SMU Texas State game. I can't remember which school it was, but because of quarantine and stuff, like contact tracing and the like, somebody tested positive, you know, and then all the people that's around you. One of those teams did not have any tight ends. They had to put offensive linemen at tight end because they just didn't have enough players in order to play the position. Tennessee was trying to have a scrimmage on Saturday, and they couldn't because they didn't have enough players, because enough guys, between the guys who had tested positive and the guys who were in their space, they could not like actually get out there and do it. You know you're going to have this all through the college football season, right? You know, like, this is just going to be the nature of it. Week to week, I have no idea what any of this is going to look like. You're going to have weeks, I'd imagine, where whole teams, at the very least, shouldn't be playing or aren't supposed to be playing. And we'll see who it is that has the temerity to say, okay, these teams are not going to play under these circumstances. But this is what's going to be tricky about this, is people are just like, oh, man, we just need to get out there. You know, football, it's okay. They can go ahead and play football. That's not such a big deal. They can go ahead and do it. And I'm like, all right, so even if you think they're not going to die, and most of them will not die, you are correct. I don't want to act like you're wrong about this. Most of the players will not die, okay? But that's not the only standard for this. Like, you saw what happened with baseball, Gabe, when they first got out there, and I think they've got it a little bit more under control, but you wind up just having whole series not being played. And it's a little bit of a different animal with football because there are fewer games. Now, baseball's down to 60 this year, so they do have a certain scarcity that they wouldn't have under a different set of circumstances. But, nah, man, this is not going to be what I think that people expect it to be. And shout out to all y'all that be putting money on these games. I don't know how you can feel comfortable doing that, man. Like, you're going to be doing a lot of dice rolling in order to try to make this happen. But they're going to get out there, and they're going to try to do it. Hook or crook, they got to find a way, man. Some of these programs, I get it, man. It's going to cost y'all tens of millions of dollars if you don't wind up playing. I, like, 100% totally understand it, and I get it. I do find this to be a little uncomfortable and in some ways a bit unseemly. Like, I don't know if you saw this, Gabe, but on one of the more surprising episodes of College Game Day of all time, Lee Corso got up there and was like, nope, I'm with the Big Ten and the Pac-12. We should not be playing.
Yeah, I mean, what he said was very surprising there. Also, Kirk Herbstreit had a bit of a moment in College Game Day as well.
Yeah, can we talk about that briefly?
Yeah.
Just for a second, because I tweeted about this, and I want to be very clear that what I'm saying here is not really a shot at Herbstreit. In fact, there may be some shots at some point, but my large point is not a shot at Herbstreit. And if you guys did not see it, I want you to hear this because game day, they were talking about just, you know, the state of the world, you know, and what's going on with college athletes and everything else. And Desmond Howard said something that I thought was huge, which is that when he was in school, he had talked to some guys about maybe doing a boycott for a lot of these reasons. And then he said he got snitched on by his partners. They went and ran and told boss. And then boss came and talked to him. And then they shut that thing down, right? But it got to Herb Street, and Herb Street was just kind of talking about what was going on in the world. And it wound up sounding like this.
I was talking to David Shaw, the head coach at Stanford, who really, he and I had a great talk. I love listening to his wisdom and his thoughts. And he shared a quote to me and reminded me from Benjamin Franklin. He said, "Justice will be served. Justice will not be served until those who are unaffected are as outraged as those who are." And I think that that's what I mean when I think the black community is hurting. If you've listened and the word empathy and compassion over these last 4 months, how do you listen to these stories and not feel pain and not want to help? You know what I mean? It's like wearing a hoodie and putting your hands at 10 and 2. Oh, God, I better look out because I'm wearing Nike gear. Like, what? What are we talking about? And so you can't relate to that if you're white, but you can listen and you can try to help because this is not okay. It's just not.
It's not.
And we got to do better, man. We got to like lock arm in arm and be together in a football locker room. That stuff is gone. Those barriers are gone. And we got to do better.
And hey, man, that was incredibly striking. Like that happened. A man like that sobbing on television is the kind of thing that's going to get people's attention. And it wound up being like a viral internet thing, right? People are like, oh my gosh, look at Kirk Herbstreit. Folks at Awful Announcer did a post where they talked about his vulnerability and how rare it is that you see this vulnerability from Kirk Herbstreit. And I'm like, wait a minute, guys. You mean to tell me that this racism out here is so strong that it brought Kirk Herbstreit to tears? And you think the story is him? You know what I mean? Like, the story about that is not him. Also, of note, not saying this is shade to Herbstreit, but those tears seem to be a deviation from his publicly expressed views on a few different things, right? I want to know more about how Kirk Herbstreit went from being the man who said that the Kaepernick stuff and all those players made him appreciate the national anthem even more, right? He said that on Twitter. It's out there. How do you go from being that guy to being the guy that's crying and saying that you got to do better by these black folks, basically? Because that was a chance to do better by black folks right then and there. That was a chance. Herbstreit didn't take it. In fact, Herbstreit in that moment took a chance to do worse by black folks at that time. I don't know what his intentions were behind that, right? Like, I could make some assumptions, but for purposes of this discussion, largely because I work with the dude, I'm not going to like go too deep into what I think he meant. But if your game on that is to hear him crying and be like, oh, Kirk, that's so great that you were crying. How about what's wrong? Why is this making you cry? Because that looked to me like a man who had to reconsider some of them things that he had said previously and realize that he was wrong about some of them. And if that's the case, then I would be far more impressed by him saying I was wrong about those things than I am by him crying in those moments. Because what I felt like we ultimately went back to doing was centering a white man. You know, we took this white man that is not the person that's actually affected by these things, took something that affected him, and then said, wow, look at Kirk Herbstreit. And then didn't have any larger discussion about what the macro issue was that brought him to that place. I don't like that. And again, I don't blame him for that. I blame y'all. I blame us as an industry. I blame everybody that's just like, oh, wow, look, Kirk Herbstreit is crying. What a big major deal that is. But if I got on TV and I was furious about this racism and I got out there and I sounded like I was furious, y'all wouldn't feel the same way, now would you? You know, probably not. You wouldn't. And so I think people need to stop and do some of their own individual math. about what it is that brings them there, how they get there, all this stuff. But that was my thought when I saw Herb Street and him, you know, crying in that moment. But I tell you this, and I think this is important. That was like the most subversive episode of College Game Day there's ever been. Like, Game Day is not the show for rocking the boat. Like, you want somebody to come in here and rock the boat about what's going on in college football, you bring that over to me. Like, I'm the guy that does that. They don't really do that on the thing that's used to sell the games. You know, that's not really what it was. Like, we at this different point, and I want to see how that show and everything else evolves as we see with college football. What's going to happen when guys can't play? You know, what's going to happen when guys get sick? I saw an interesting number on Twitter the other day. A scientist had pointed this out, that what they're finding, because, you know, everybody's thing about the players is they're not going to die. You know, and then we had the doctors from the Big Ten that were talking about with the myocarditis and the risk there was about that. And there's been some questions about what exactly that guy was saying and whether it was directly that 30% of the guys had it, you know, so forth and so on, whatever. Got you. This was my thing about it, though. I saw a scientist that made a point that, no, this is unlikely to kill younger people, this virus, but that for people between 30 and 60, and again, college football players are not between 30 and 60, but still, for people between 30 and 60, that the rate at which people get COVID-19 and then suffer long-term organ damage is the same as the mortality rate of those over 60. You see what I mean? So maybe it won't kill you, but you might wish you were dead. Like, this is a legitimate possibility. I saw a story about a cross-country runner, 22 years old, can't walk across the room, like, because of oxygen capacity and stuff like this. Like, look, man, we putting these kids out here at some real serious risk right now in order to do this. And they're doing it because the whole operation needs this money. They spent more money than they should have, and now the whole operation needs this bread, right? Like, this is why people are out here engaging in college football right now. But this isn't good, right? Like, this is not, this is a thing. Like, I got to reckon within myself about, like, what level of attention I want to pay to this, how I want to treat it, like, as a person and also professionally as we talk about this, because I just don't think, this is not what's going on with the NFL. The NFL seems to have this figured out in some form of fashion. And a big part of why I think the NFL has this figured out in some form of fashion is because these are grown men that are getting paid. They're more likely to engage in this responsibly, right? Like, there are different stakes that are involved, and they're more likely to be surrounded by responsible people. College students are the least reliable people in the world. And the reason they're the least reliable people in the world is you can't really tell them what to do, but you kind of need to. They think they grown. I can do whatever I want. Like, when you're in college, you think being grown is about doing whatever you want as opposed to doing what you should. Like, when you're a kid, it's about doing what you're told. When you're in college, it's about doing what you want. When you're grown, it's about doing what you should.
You think you're grown because, like, you cooked yourself dinner.
Yes.
Oh, I'm grown now.
Yeah. You think you're grown because no one has to wake you up. Actually, someone does have to wake you up in many cases, but there's nobody there to do it. You know, like, that is how college students typically see the world. This is where it is. There's a lot of potentially terrible outcomes for this, for college football. And we just all need to be honest and real about this going in. On the NFL side, I got to give them all the credit in the world. I didn't think they'd be able to make this work. They have made this work. This looked like it was going to be a catastrophe as recently as a month ago. It looked like they didn't have any idea what they were doing. One way or another, they figured out how to make things work. This is what I want to know about the NFL, though. How many people, like, realize the season starts this week? Like, if I ain't had my fantasy draft last week, I'm not sure I would know. And I ask that because, like, I don't know if you've seen some of the ratings for Hard Knocks this year. They had one week that was literally the worst rated Hard Knocks episode ever, ever. Like, you know, normally when Hard Knocks comes out, there's an energy that surrounds it, you know, and everyone's like, oh man, Hard Knocks is here. Like, Hard Knocks is kind of leading you into what's coming next, you know, like, you know it, like, oh man, this is coming. But I feel like people didn't even know that Hard Knocks was on, and that's because all the cues that we get, like all the other stuff that ties us and lets us know what time of year it is, it doesn't feel like that anymore. Kind of like it doesn't feel like it's Thanksgiving if it's 90 degrees. You know, like that's like we don't have the cues around us to tell us that the time is here. It's kind of like one of the interesting things about watching these basketball games with no fans. Like, you know, you used to be able to like go walk in the kitchen while a basketball game was on with no fans, and you know, a big play happens or whatever, and the crowd screams, and now you go run to the TV to be like, oh damn, what did I miss? But there are no screams. There's no big things. Like you don't have any feel for what's going on. And I think that's happening to people just kind of in larger life. You know, people do not know that it's football season because it doesn't feel like football season. Like, does it feel like football season while the basketball playoffs are going on? For example, you know, it just doesn't have that feel. So Thursday night, like the first game of the year is here, and it just doesn't feel like it. Like, our world is so thrown off, and it, you know, it just doesn't feel like football season is really here. But it is here. It's going to be here on Thursday. And Gabe, we're going to get ready to watch these football games without no people. That's going to be strange.
Stranger than what you've been watching thus far?
In the sense that, especially with NFL games, you watch a few basketball games that don't have a lot of people at them. You know, maybe like not like no people, but don't have a lot of people at them. Football games, it's a different, like the noise in a football stadium when you watch a football game is different, right? Because with basketball, the action is continuous in basketball. Basketball and hockey in particular, right? The action is continuous. It goes, it goes, it goes. There are little stops here and there, but it goes and goes and goes. The action in football is discrete. D-I-S-C-R-E-T-E, not to be confused with D-I-S-C-R-E-E-T. Difference between continuous and discrete is a continuous function, again, goes, it goes, it goes. A discrete function is individual actions, right? Like everything is boom, 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 boom. In football, the plays are discrete, right? This play, this play, this play. If it transitions from one play to another, there's a break in between. Everybody resettles. And so with football, like the first play of the game, oh, everybody's screaming. Then you go, and then you scream at the end of the play, and then you take a 40-second break. And then you jump in, and then you go, or, you know, or whatever it is. But with basketball, like a great play can happen in basketball, and half the people are watching, and the other half catch up because the first half screamed at whatever the thing was, you know? And so for football, not having people is just going to feel a lot different. Like, I'm curious to know if they're going to try to pan in a little tighter on some of the shots, you know, just to kind of take away from the fact that it's going to feel so bizarre. I'm curious to know what the microphone action, like field stuff, is going to be, how much of that stuff is it that we're going to hear, like all of that. But we got a lot of really compelling storylines with the NFL this year, I think. And we're just not there. And I also think that for some people, like for the NFL, I feel different about college than I feel about the NFL right now. But like for college, it doesn't feel right. I don't feel guilty about the NFL doing this for a number of reasons, including the fact that the guys get paid. But, you know, I feel like they negotiated on both sides. They figured out what the terms were that they would need to be able to play. But I mean, like Cam Newton plays for the New England Patriots. Like, I don't think we've had time to really like wrap our minds around how absurd that is. And by the way, Gabe, they haven't officially named a starter, but they did make Cam Newton a captain. Do you remember when Cam Newton went there and they really was out here trying to convince us that it was a quarterback competition? They really was trying to tell us that maybe Brian Hoyer would be able to win the job, or maybe Jared Stidham would win the job. And their argument behind that was Cam needed to learn the offense. Well, it sounds like if Cam couldn't learn the offense, you know what y'all need? A new offense, right? Like if your offense is so specialized that Brian Hoyer's knowledge of it means more than Cam Newton being Cam Newton, then something wrong with your offense. Any offense that's a better fit for Brian Hoyer than Cam Newton is an offense that you need to throw out the window, period. Period. You know, they ain't been out there, Brian Hoyer coming in and being like, coach, I got to be honest with you, man. I really feel like I'm a better fit for running these plays in the offense. Guess what? Them plays wouldn't be in the offense no more. We wouldn't be running those plays. That would make me realize, wow, these were stupid plays. I would feel like a moron if I was out here under those circumstances. Ben Roethlisberger's coming back. You remember that guy?
After all he's been through.
After, and all he's put people through. He's coming back. Of course, everything that's going on with Tampa Bay. And fun fact, Leonard Fournette's first game with the Bucs will be back in his hometown.
Teamed up with Tom Brady.
That's right. I love the idea of Leonard Fournette and Tom Brady on the same team, though. Leonard Fournette is just hilarious. I get why they cut him. I get all the limitations of his game. I love Leonard Fournette.
What do you think about Josh Rosen signing with the Bucs?
Yeah, you're a UCLA fan. You're a UCLA alum.
Yes.
Were you as wrong as I was about him as a pro?
I didn't know what to make of Rosen in his time at UCLA just because he was managed so poorly.
Yes.
The thing with Rosen was that in high school, he really wanted to go to Stanford. When it came time to it, he was like a little arrogant. He showed up on Stanford's campus for like a visit or something like that. And they were just totally turned off by Rosen. Like Shaw and co were totally turned off. That was a hard pass by Shaw. So he didn't end up at UCLA because he that was necessarily his number one option. But boy, was it not good for his development.
Yeah, you never play for Jim Mora.
No. Three different offensive coordinators, three different styles as well. He had Noel Mazzoni with the kind of like air raid thing. Right. Then he had Kennedy Polamalu, former USC running backs coach with a little pro style thing. Jed Fish, formerly of Michigan. Then he goes to Arizona. Doesn't work out. Then he goes to Miami. Doesn't work out.
The fact that nobody would trade for him.
That's pretty damning.
That's the worst. Look, somebody traded for Blaine Gabbert. Like, after Blaine Gabbert had demonstrated in the NFL that he was Blaine Gabbert, somebody was willing to give up a 6 for him. Jim Harbaugh, in fact, was willing to give up like a 6 for him. That's the part that worries me about Rosen, is that I thought that of those guys in that draft, there's a good chance he'd be the best one. You know, like, I thought that coming out of school, he was ahead of where Sam Darnold was, and I'm still not there on Sam Darnold. But if Rosen had gotten traded away from Miami, I would look at it one way. The fact that they just cut him, that was what made me be like, oh, wow, like, I think I was wrong about this. And you know what to me is actually the most disappointing part about being wrong about him? That dude is so smart, and that dude gets it, like, as it relates to the world. Like, I mean, I've heard all the stories about his arrogance, and I think I may have talked, I don't know if I've talked about it on this podcast, but as someone who grew up in a very similar situation to Josh Rosen, I can see why it took him some time to learn how to, for lack of a better term, fit in when he got to college. The truth is, he's just way smarter than everybody else and way more exposed than everybody else. Like, his mom's a judge. I forget what his dad does. Like, it's not just about the money to me. It's about the people that he was in a space to meet and the conversations that he's able to have. But I remember he was at the combine and somebody asked Rosen about just like being a leader, right? And how that goes and the rah-rah stuff. And I just remember he was so self-aware. He was just like, look, man, nobody's going to believe that stuff if I do it. He's like, I just have to go out here and lead by example. You know, like, I'm not going to be able to be. I was like, wow, you get that you're not going to fake this. You're not going to be that guy. They also felt like there was always a tinge of anti-Semitism in the way that he was being discussed, you know, because it's tricky because in football, you're too smart. They say that about everybody, right? But even still, like, the things they were worried that he was too concerned about and stuff like that was like, wait a minute, that sounds like you're just talking about Jews, which, by the way, doesn't really come up very much in football, right? Like, our anti-Semitism meter in football, we're not as ready to hear it in football because we don't have as many Jews.
My man was ready to, you know, raise the flag, carry the flag for all of us.
Yeah, man. You know, so it may work out for him one day. But why I'm really disappointed is in these times in particular, I would love to hear what Josh Rosen has to say about the world. And I think if he were good, he could have great potential. Like, this is how I look at Joe Burrow. Hey, man. Don't y'all mess around and let Joe Burrow be good. Because if Joe Burrow is good, y'all going to hear some things from Joe Burrow that a lot of y'all are not comfortable with. Because at least as far as I see the world, Joe Burrow was on the side of right. And not only is Joe Burrow on the side of right, Joe Burrow don't really give a damn what you think. Like, that is a cocky son, and he going to tell you what he thinks. He going to roll out here with it. And, like, I hope he's good just for that reason. Just to make some people in places like Cincinnati, where he's a hero already, well, this is the man you're going to have to listen to a little bit, because he's going to have some things to say about all this stuff, you know? And so that was like my disappointment for me with Rosen and it not working out. What else we got interesting out here playing football? I am actually interested in the Cardinals. I'm on the Kyler Murray train now. I was not on the Kyler Murray train before.
And why is that?
He was so good at the end of last year. Like, when I got to watching him late, I was like, oh, this dude is good. And they got DeAndre Hopkins.
That's a trade that most people are going to forget about until they see him line up week one.
Like, oh, damn. There's going to be so many things like that, right? Because we haven't really been paying attention. You'd be like, oh, damn, for real? That happened?
And also thinking that maybe a season wouldn't happen. Yes. So you're just kind of like trying to almost separate yourself from it so you don't get as disappointed.
Yes. We're going to have a lot that we're going to figure out. And I just hope for one thing for this whole NFL season. One thing. Only one. I just hope Alex Smith does not play it down. But does it look like good things are going to happen if they put him out there to play football? Does it look like that to you? It looked like he had drop foot when they sent that video out that one time.
I mean, it's going to have to go really bad for Dwayne Haskins if Alex Smith is going to play, right?
Yeah, but even if Haskins gets hurt, put anybody else in the world in the game, man. And good for Alex Smith. Good for Alex Smith. Also good to be white. And I say good to be white because they're paying him $16 million to make people feel good. To make him 60, they ain't go to him and be like, look, man, we can't pay you at these prices. They still paying him $16 million. Like, what kind of all lives matter is that, right? Like, they're still paying him $16 million to be the backup. To be the backup that almost lost his leg. It ain't enough that y'all let him stay on the team. Y'all giving him his full check. Are you serious? And again, good for you, Alex Smith. Get your money. Agent, but they only giving that $16 million to a white man. They are not giving that $16 million to no black dude with one foot. You kidding me? That is never happening under any circumstance whatsoever. None. Let me tell you right now, Dwayne Haskins, you better not break your foot like that because it is not going to go the same way for you under these same circumstances. It $16 million to beat a one-footed 36-year-old backup quarterback. They hadn't thought about it like that, had you?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and again, no shade to Alex. But I'm talking about this other stuff. Come on, man. Whew. Good gracious. And anyway, on a totally different note, the last thing I'll say about the NFL, I'm going to just say this real quick and let you think about it on your own, all right? What if Tua Tagovailoa is the Babe Ruth of football? NBA bubble. I tweeted something that I feel like I need to talk about a little bit more because some of y'all just don't understand the world and understand. Well, honestly, don't understand basketball, I don't think, and I don't think y'all understand people in some ways. So, you know me, Gabe. I use the analytics, but I would not consider myself a quote-unquote analytics guy because I feel like the people that lean on analytics are people who do that so that they don't actually have to watch basketball games, right? Like, you feel like you can draw a story and come up with all these things based on the numbers with some ignorance of, like, what the things are that you actually see or, like, some lived experience or whatever it is. Got it. So, Anthony Davis looked bad in game one of the series against the Rockets. He looked bad in game one, except the thing about him looking bad in game one is he didn't look bad on the score sheet, right? On the score sheet, I want to say he was 10 for 16. They lost that game by 15 points, but Anthony Davis was 10 for 16 in that game. The bigger problem I have with the Lakers in that game, or the problem I have with Anthony Davis, is people are like, yeah, but he was 10 for 16. The 10 was cool. The 16 was the problems that he did not take more shots. And again, I understand why you might look at me and say Anthony Davis scored 25 points, had 14 rebounds, had 3 steals and 3 blocks. How are you going to tell me that Anthony Davis looked bad? And I'm going to say he looked bad because he had PJ Tucker in his chest. And I didn't like the way that he handled it when PJ Tucker was in his chest, right? This is my thing. If you're going to be Anthony Davis and you're going to be playing against this small ball team, okay? Anthony Davis lives in a permanent existential crisis when it comes to his existence as a basketball player. Gabe, I don't remember if I told you about this, but, you know, back when I used to play basketball and you go out and you play pickup and they shoot for captains and the captains come up and then they start picking people. You know, they go, you know, the cast that everybody knows is good or whatever. And then you start, like, getting toward the end. And you start needing to fill out your roster a little bit. And a cat will look at me and be like, all right, big man. And I'm like, no, no, no. I'm not big man. I'm tall man. Okay? Big man and tall man are not the same thing, right? I didn't have a big man game. I ain't got that sturdy base. My game was not based around putting a shoulder in you. That's not what my game was, because invariably I would wind up being guarded by big man, okay? And sometimes big man is not even big, okay? PJ Tucker, that's big man. Anthony Davis is tall man. You see the difference, right? And anybody who remembers PJ Tucker as a college basketball player, right? And this is a big thing that I think gets lost, especially now that so much time has passed. PJ Tucker was a great college basketball player. PJ Tucker played on the same team in college with LaMarcus Aldridge, and PJ Tucker was the Big 12 player of the year, right? But the issue for PJ Tucker was he was a 6'4" or 6'5" power forward. And unless you're Charles Barkley or Larry Johnson, the NBA doesn't have a lot of room for guys like that. So he had to take all those years playing overseas to basically turn himself into a guard, because PJ didn't take anything outside of 10 feet when he was at Texas, because he didn't have to. Nobody could stop him from getting to the basket. NBA, a little bit of a different ball game, right? You want another example, by the way, of big man versus tall man? It was a game that PJ Tucker was there for. Somebody mentioned it in my Twitter mentions. 2006 Elite Eight. LSU played against Texas in what was probably the worst coaching matchup ever for teams to get to the Final Four, with Rick Barnes and John Brady on either side of each other. And so, again, LaMarcus Aldridge, sophomore LaMarcus Aldridge, right? He was the number two pick in the draft the following year. He was not a great college player, but he was still LaMarcus Aldridge. On the other side was a legitimate great college player, a gentleman named Glenn Big Baby Davis, right? Now, you know how LaMarcus Aldridge is built. You know how Glenn Davis is built. Glenn Davis just muscled him all game long. Just muscled him. There was nothing that Aldridge could do really guarding Davis. I want to say Davis had something like 15 free throws attempted in that game or something like that, just purely off muscle. And then every time Aldridge would try to set up on him, Davis just put that forearm on him and sat that big ass down, and there was nothing that he could do, because Glenn Davis is big man. LaMarcus Aldridge at the time was tall man. They're not the same thing, right? So anyway, bring this back over to Anthony Davis and Tucker. What worried me about Davis with Tucker guarding him was Tucker knows that he's only got one way that he can guard Anthony Davis. I just got to muscle this dude. It's going to be about me wanting this badder than he does, right? Because I can't actually stop him. I just have to make him feel like I can. And that is what PJ did a lot in that first game. Because where I was worried about Davis was, your response to being muscled cannot be to go backwards every time. It can't be. Like, if you got a fadeaway as a move, you need to be doing that fadeaway because that's the shot that you want to take. If you ever take a fadeaway because that's the shot the defense wants you to take, you have lost.
And you're talking about on the left-hand side of the paint, one-on-one.
Yep.
That's the spot where if you're AD, you just got to go to work, right?
Yep. Yep. And Tucker just right there, just like, yo, we've all seen that guy play basketball before. Right? It's the old head who's guarding like the young dude that's got a college scholarship, right? And he's just like, yo, all I got here is old head game. That's all I got to do. We've all been guarded by our dad, our uncle, somebody who just can't guard us no more. So all they going to do is muscle us. And we've all had that moment when it first starts where we don't quite know what to do, right? You're a little rattled by it. And that's what happened to Davis in game one, no matter what the stat sheet says. And so what I said was, it's going to be a long series for him being guarded by PJ Tucker. That's not to say that he's not going to be able to do anything with him. That's to say that PJ Tucker is just going to make it a long night every night, because that's what he's got to provide. Like, what he has to offer is trying to muscle you. If he was guarding Kevin Durant, it would be the same game, right? It would be the same strategy. And so Anthony Davis is going to have to figure out, when he's getting muscled, how to score going forward. And what looked different to me in game two versus game one is he was scoring points going forward. You know, like, he was getting muscled, but he was still finding a way, like, to square his shoulders to the rim and go forward. Even if going forward is shooting a jumper, you just can't let this man bully you into fadeaways. You know? And so that's what I want to see from Davis in this, is that's going to be the turn for him where he has to realize they are coming out here to punk you. You know, because if he can be punked, this is why it's a big deal. If he can be punked, it's a big deal because now it doesn't matter if you're 7 feet tall. Okay. I don't know how well you remember the 2007 Western Conference first round series where the Mavericks got with the number one seed and got eliminated by the Warriors.
Do I remember it?
You're from there.
Believe.
Sorry. My bad. I forgot your local ties. But you know, you ain't a Warriors fan. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah, you're right.
You know, but what happened in that series was what Don Nelson and all those guys figured out was it doesn't matter if Dirk Nowitzki is 7 feet tall if he doesn't have a post game. And so what were they doing? They were sending Al Harrington and Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes. And what were they doing? They just bullied that dude. They just muscled that dude. They just stayed up under his shoulders in the perimeter, and Dirk didn't have anything. Like, Dirk didn't need to be Hakeem Olajuwon, but Dirk didn't have any way to use his size other than to shoot over people. And you saw the results. He had to change up everything after that. After the 2008, when David West tapped his jaw, it's a whole new Dirk after that point. But all the numbers, all the analytics, all that stuff went out the window. They bullied him, and it worked. And once somebody knows that they can bully you, everything's off the table, man. We can guard you with anybody once we know that. Like, if Anthony Davis is going to respond to being muscled by shooting turnarounds, then James Harden can guard him. All those guys the Rockets have can guard them. Because look, man, don't let nobody talk this to you about how it doesn't matter that the Rockets play small ball because their guys have long arms. You know who else has long arms? Everybody in the NBA. Everybody in the NBA. So you can say PJ Tucker has a 6'11 wingspan. Okay. You know what Anthony Davis' wingspan is? 7'3". Like, I just sat up here and started Googling player wingspan. Like, the Rockets, it's cute that those Rockets guys have those long wingspans, but this is the NBA. That's how you get there, is by having a long wingspan. The thing with those guys is about being sturdy, right? And it's that, but that, even that sturdiness, it's not about size. It's about want to. And PJ Tucker, a can't go back all-star, that's a want to dude. Look, I give you this hint about PJ Tucker. I ain't throwing no shade at nobody. I want to be clear, but I'm just telling you a story. So one day, this was in like 2007 or 2008. I had a Outside the Lines hit to do. And I was already at the local sports radio station in Raleigh. I lived in Durham. Durham and Raleigh are two different places, for those of you who don't know. So I'm in Raleigh, and I get this call about doing Outside the Lines, but I needed a cut. And so I hit up, I'm like, anybody know where I can get a haircut? But it was a sports radio station. Don't nobody know where I can get a haircut. You know what I'm saying? Come on now. They know where they can get a haircut. They don't know where I can get a haircut. And so I just started Googling barbershops. And I was like, I wonder how I'll know if it's a black barbershop. And then I got to Big Will's barbershop. And I was like, that's the one. And so I don't know nothing about Raleigh at this point because I never had any reason to go over there. And so I'm rolling. And I guess I like pushed through downtown. And Raleigh, one of them places where it goes from downtown to downtown without you really noticing. And I pull up. And Big Will's, as I recall, there was a laundromat on one side and a check cashing joint on the other. So I went in. I got a haircut. It was cool. But anyway, PJ's brother is a barber there. Like, I walked in and saw in the chair next to me all the PJ Tucker stuff on the wall. All right. I say that to you to say that PJ Tucker is not going back to whatever part of Raleigh he is from. It ain't happening. That dude went to Turkey, went to all, you know, Iraq, Iran, Eurasia. You know, he went to all them places, right? He got where he is by muscling the Anthony Davises of the world. That's what it is. And so what we're going to learn about Davis is, can he go forward? When these things happen, can he go forward? That's what we're going to see. Because here's the thing also. If Tucker can do it, you know who's going to be there to do it next series? Montrezl Harrell. Marcus Morris. You know, the Clippers don't have nobody. I mean, Kawhi Leonard, he guards the same way. Paul George can even, you know, you're going to get muscled, dude. And now we're going to learn a lot about what Anthony Davis' heart is about. When you get hit in the chest, how do you respond? Can you just decide, I'm not letting this dude who can't guard me guard me? That's what they're going to have to figure out. Yo, man, Gabe, what happened with your man Djokovic?
With my man Djokovic.
I don't know whose man he is, dog. Like, I don't really know what to make of this. But Djokovic got a reputation. Actually, this has been a really bad 2020 for Djokovic. Messing it up, not just for himself, but also for everybody else. Djokovic is Mr. He ain't about that vaccine life. For whatever reason. That's not what he is. But Djokovic threw a tournament over there in Europe, invited some people. They all went out, and then they caught the COVID. You remember that? Again, Djokovic messing it up for himself and others under those circumstances. And now we got a U.S. Open where Federer's not playing because he's like, yo, y'all nasty. Nadal's not playing because he's like, yo, y'all nasty. Djokovic, this is the draw. You know, this is the guy that people who don't even really watch tennis see that he's playing and that people are going to turn on the match. And they are going to watch it, which is, by the way, how people make money, especially when you cannot sell tickets.
And also going into the tournament, he's getting pretty close in lifetime Grand Slam titles. I think he has like 16 and Nadal is at 18 or something like that. Sampras just below him and then Federer right above him. So this would have been a huge tournament for him.
Yes, yes. And that dude went off and hit the ball lady in the throat. Like, he's known for having these outbursts of sorts, and he tried to, like, he was mad, he tried to hit the ball, and I don't know where he was trying to hit the ball, but I do feel like he wasn't trying to hit that lady in the throat, and the throat is exactly where he hit her, and she fell down and hit the ground, and Gabe said that if he had to hit her in the throat, it would have been funny, and it's okay, we can be honest. It was funny because he hit her in the throat, and then we caught ourselves, and we're like, wait a minute, this woman might be seriously hurt. I don't make things funny, they just happen to be that way. I'll take this one for the team. I'll be the one to say that, yeah, before I realized she was actually injured, I was like, yo! And so
people really have to watch the video. Because the thing about it is, too, is that, like, it's not like he's even necessarily being nonchalant about the way he's hitting the ball away. It felt pretty targeted. Like, he was like, all right, I'm going to hit this against the back wall. And I'm going to hit it very directly, fully not knowing and forgetting that she was there.
Yes.
And what's interesting about it, too, is that there have been some other tournaments this year. I saw someone say on Twitter that a line judge hasn't been back there, or they haven't had line judges in the back at all. And it's just been based strictly off of like the Hawkeye software that determines whether the ball is in or out. So he could have, there's so many things that could have been going through his head. He could have even been thinking, forgetting that the line judge is back there, thwacks it, knocks the lady in the throat, then gets disqualified for the whole tournament.
Yes.
That's a wrap.
Yes.
You
see
the look on his face too and the reaction.
Oh, he's like, basically he's like, how you gonna do me like that? Right? Like, I mean, and they had to. They had no choice but to put him out of there. And by the way, he was wrong. He was wrong. There's no way. And look, once you hit the lady in the throat, man, you can't be out here begging. You just got, and she was old. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, come on, man. You just gotta go. That's it.
She doesn't have to be there. She is older, and she's at a tournament with the dude who doesn't believe in vaccines.
Right.
She's putting herself in the line of fire in more than one way.
She got caught. She hit the ground. They just like, come on, man. Once we had the old lady crumpled up, dog, like, we got to take you out of here. So, yeah, now he done messed up everybody's TV money. You know what I'm saying? He done messed up his own money. I imagine that he will be hearing from Peppa and Bayleaf or whatever lawyer she finds in the phone book. Let me tell you this right now, boy. Once the lawyers find out that woman's name, they going to be all over her. Like, man, I was just wondering, what kind of car you drive? What kind of house you live in? Don't you think you'd be more comfortable right now in a much bigger house? Yeah, now you're talking, right? Now they're going to get him out of there. Now, the obvious comparison that people have made is between this and what happened with Serena Williams. In the match against Osaka and some other ones too, because she's another, like Djokovic, she has outbursts that don't necessarily look that great, right? The difference between what happened with Serena in the match against Osaka and what happened with Djokovic in this one, I think there are a couple. One, of course, is that what happened with Serena was like a running saga throughout that match, right? Like it was like paper cuts. It's like if we start with this thing and then we get to this thing. And if you took one of those things out and one of those things never happened, it doesn't build quite in the same way. And with Djokovic, this is all about one thing, right? The other thing is, though, the reaction to Serena was obviously more visceral from people than it is with Djokovic. And for me, this is a little tricky because I don't think Djokovic was trying to hit that woman. You know, I don't believe that. It just doesn't matter that he wasn't trying to hit her. I don't believe he was trying to hit her. He did, and now you got to go. Like, for me, it's just, that was a very technical sort of situation. With Serena, as everything is the case with Serena, it becomes less about the actions, and it becomes more about whatever Serena Williams means to you, good or bad. Because, look, Serena lost me on hers. She got out there, and she said she wasn't being coached when it looked like it was fairly obvious that she was being coached. And then she went and told the umpire, "Don't accuse me of lying. I am a mother." What? I'm sorry. Has your mother ever lied to you? Because my mother has damn sure lied to me before. Like, she don't do it all the time, but you ain't going to tell me she ain't never, like nobody's mama's ever lied, you know? And I was just like, come on. Like, I found a lot of how she handled that situation to be, whatever. And this is the comparison that I make, is that what Djokovic did was actually worse. Obviously, he hit this woman in the throat. I thought that what happened with Serena and the way that she carried it looked worse. Now, part of why I think that looked worse, though, is some of my personal sensibilities. Like, I don't know if I told y'all this, but when I was a younger kid, I kind of had, like, temper and control problems, like young or whatever. And it was made very clear to me that that is not acceptable behavior. And so I view that in other people as unacceptable behavior. Like, I don't have a lot of sympathy for people who can't keep their shit together. I just don't. So for me, with Serena, that looked worse. I see somebody lose control in a sporting event, you're not going to see me defend them. No matter what happened on the other side, it's highly unlikely you're going to see me defend that person, because I don't believe in that. I just think that's how you should behave. But I also don't believe you should hit people with stuff. But I can understand how people thought it looked worse with Serena. The issue with Serena, though, it wasn't even so much about how it looked after a point. It then became a reaction to it that was outsized and not fair, given what the circumstances were. And people just went too far with it, you know, and you got people doing cartoons, like calling her an animal and all of that stuff. Ain't nobody gonna write no cartoon about Djokovic and how he got down and all of that. You're not gonna see it happen, but it's just weird, because what Djokovic did was worse. It just didn't have all the buildup to it, and therefore is not going to generate the same reaction. But they ain't have to kick Serena out the whole match, did they? I thought she just had like a game penalty and then it was a wrap. But they ain't have to do to her like they did to Djokovic. Because what Djokovic did was worse. Dude, can you imagine how much it hurt to get hit in the throat with that ball? That's that one right there. Like, if you had somebody like thump you in the throat, I can't talk. You're not choking, you just can't talk. Like, that's what that had to be.
And being surprised about it, because it came out of nowhere, too.
Yes! Like, imagine trying to figure out what happened, right? Like, if you weren't looking and it happened, like, yo, just try to do the I don't understand what. Like, you ever got your hand caught in a ceiling fan? I've had my hand get caught in the ceiling fan, but I wasn't even thinking about it being a ceiling fan there. Like, for whatever reason, I put my hand up and the ceiling was low. But if you don't know that's a ceiling fan, it doesn't hurt that much. But if you don't know it's a ceiling fan, imagine trying to figure out what just happened. Except this was a tennis ball hit by the number one player in the world. Good luck, lady. Good luck.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from education.
I'm Heather Kelly, a technology reporter at The Washington Post. As the remote school year begins in earnest in many parts of the U.S., millions of kids are attending school online. The schedules vary wildly between states, districts, and ages, but the kids are being asked to do something that would make most adults miserable. Sit in front of a computer, staring into Zoom with their camera on, for as many as 6 hours a day. After a summer of families relying on extra recreational screen time, kids are getting way more screen time than they ever bargained for. And after just 1 or 2 weeks of school, we're starting to see the impact on students. Headaches, anxiety, fatigue, eye strain, and stress. One mother said her 9-year-old daughter cried twice during her first week of fourth grade because she had a headache from staring at her Chromebook screen all day. Another parent's teenage son was kicked out of class after he turned off his camera to run to the bathroom. Some schools are under pressure from parents who want them to replicate not just teaching, but the other service schools provide that isn't talked about as much. And that's an almost full day of childcare. But education experts say the ideal way to learn remotely is not by recreating a full day of surveillance at home. It should be a mix of short lecture-type classes, interactive small groups, and time for kids to learn offline with projects or practice on their own.
Yo, just the problem is there's nobody really to supervise it. Like, I get why people would absolutely have preferred to have like in-person school this year. And it seems like just a disaster for kids. Again, just staring at the laptop screen so much. I get that. I also do think, Gabe, Can we tell some of these people about mirroring this to the TV rather than staring at a laptop all the time, like having it on a TV screen?
Yeah, I mean, because certainly you could get creative with having like a microphone set up in front of you. You get your headphones, you mirror the screen to the TV. So at least instead of watching down, you're watching up. Maybe the little kid sitting on the couch is a little bit more comfortable.
And the mirroring shouldn't affect the camera, right? So you can still have the camera, whatever, set up where it is. And then you just go up. Like, I don't know. Because I mean, like that headache thing really jumped out to me. Like, I was just thinking about this with the kids where we talked a long time about how we don't know the effects on brains that all these the screen staring that we do is going to have, that we just don't know. And now we're doing it to these kids in a whole different sort of way. Like, yo, my screen time messages from my phone are uncomfortable. Like, they tell me numbers that I am startled by.
I think the problem, though, with the mirroring is that you're going to get a lot of back, forth, back, forth, back, forth.
Yeah, I think there's something to that, but I feel like that's got to be better for the kids' heads. Like, that's just my thought, is that it's just got to be better. Like, the idea that these kids are, like, suffering from headaches from looking at the screen, and the teachers are in a bad place. They're like, yo, you put them out of class because he got up to go to the bathroom and all of this stuff, and yo, if you're the teacher, you just can't have kids going in and out. Like, I understand that part, too. You know, these little jokers see one person do it, the other one's going to do it, and the other one's going to do it, you know, and so forth and so on. Like, I just can't see how anybody can win under these circumstances. I feel so bad for all of them. And applause to all these teachers that are trying to figure out how to make this work. Because they don't just have to deal with the kids anymore. They got to deal with y'all. And by y'all, I mean parents. And you guys, like, I think we talked about this, or somebody put something on Twitter talking about how this kid got something to eat during a class and he was sitting on the screen eating it, going to get the food. And the mother heard the teacher on the Zoom say something about him. And the mother was like, girl, he's hungry. Let him get something to eat. And I'm like, no, because you're not the one that's going to have to deal with every other kid trying to get up and get, like, we got to maintain some level of order here. The kids be hungry at school too. We wait for lunch, right? This is how things work. But all of you think that your kids, most of whom aren't that impressive, are so special that you got to do for them. That's the truth. Most of your kids aren't impressive. That's not why you love them. You love them because they're yours, right? You love them because they're yours. If I got to think they're impressive for you to love them, it is you that has a problem. And the truth is, like, I saw some meme where somebody's like, God didn't put us here to be average. Not true. God put most of y'all here to be average. That's what average means. Most of y'all. I don't know what God planned for you to do, right? But being average was definitely in the realm of possibility. That's how average works.
Oh my gosh. All right, this second one comes from education.
Doug Hanks at the Miami Herald here. So we had quite the controversy at the American Airlines Arena when it comes to the November election, when the NBA has made a big push to bring voting to its arenas. The Miami Heat was a big advocate for that and offered its arena, which is in downtown Miami, to be a site for about 2 weeks of early voting, which is a big deal in its home county, Miami-Dade County. And the county's election department said, well, we're actually in the market for a new downtown site because our normal spot, a performing arts center, is shut down for construction, so we'll take a look. They said they looked at that, and they looked at a nearby museum, the Frost Science Museum, and decided we're going to go with the Frost Science Museum. Why? They say, well, for one thing, we know we can use the museum year after year. We can't with the Heat Arena because typically NBA season would be going on during early voting. Also, the museum is right next to a transit station, to a train station, essentially. The Heat issued a very strong statement suggesting that more things were at work here, and we had some Democrat candidates, including a sitting congresswoman, really criticize the county, which is headed by this congresswoman's Republican opponent, Mayor Carlos Jimenez, who's running for Congress. And the allegation was essentially, how could you possibly turn down the NBA's offer to turn out the vote? There must be some effort to not want those voters participating, essentially not see an increase in the voters that the Heat would attract by a voting campaign at its home court. So that's where we are. The map remains the same. There'll be early voting at the Frost Museum about four blocks away and not the American Airlines Arena. And we'll see if the pressure succeeds to add the American Airlines Arena as well.
All right. So here's my thing about this. Again, we have talked about this before. I didn't make it this way, but this is the truth. There are two parties that matter in this country, and one of them consistently doesn't want people to vote. One of them consistently does. They're both doing so out of self-interest. So I don't ascribe a nobility to the party that wants people to vote. Because if the party that wanted people to vote didn't think those people would vote for them, they would not want people to vote, right? Let's just be clear about that. But the bottom line is you can't trust any Republican who is doing something that seems to interfere with people's ability to vote. On face value, you can't do it. Like, there's enough historical fact, recent and otherwise, to indicate that. You just can't do it. Because the thing about that, to me, is very simple. I lived in Miami for 4 years, okay? I don't know where the Frost Museum is. I'm aware of it, but if you were to ask me how to get to the Frost Museum right now, I could not tell you. Everybody in Miami knows where the arena is. Literally, I would argue, every person in the city knows where the arena is. You might not know the exact address. You might not know the exact street, but it's right on Biscayne Boulevard, right there by the water, not too far from the bridge to take you over to South Beach. Everybody knows where it is. You can see an overhead shot of the game, and it shows you that arena. And if you know anything about the city of Miami, you can know how to get there from there. People don't know where the Frost Museum is. I would say that there are more people, at least, that don't know where the Frost Museum is than that. And so, no, you can't trust them on face value about that. You just can't. And, I mean, where they said, though, the problem is you won't be able to use the Heat Arena every year because it's normally, you know, it's basketball season. Or you guys could get on the calendar and book the arena, and then you could have it there every year. Because as things are right now, wouldn't this be a great time to ask a team to do that? And boom, problem would be solved if you want people to vote.
All right, this last one comes from education.
My name is Demisha Inman. I'm a journalist with The Griot, and we've been reporting on the story of Dr. Jessica Krug. Back on September 3rd, Krug announced through a self-published Medium post that she has been lying about her racial identity for the entirety of her academic career. She has been posing as a Black woman with different backgrounds when she is really a Jewish woman from suburban Kansas. She writes in that post that she has assumed identities within a Blackness that she had no right to claim. First, North African Blackness, then U.S.-rooted Blackness, then Caribbean-rooted Bronx Blackness. Now, since she has come forward with this information, it has been announced that she will not teach classes this semester. However, the History Department has moved forward with calling for her resignation. The History Department says that she has essentially betrayed the trust of countless current and former students. The statement reads, "The discipline of history is concerned with truth-telling about the past. With her conduct, Dr. Krug has raised questions about the veracity of her own research and teaching. Accordingly, the department calls upon Dr. Krug to resign from her position as Associate Professor of History at GW, failing that the department recommends the rescinding of her tenure and the termination of her appointment." Now, at the time that we did publish this story, her staff page was still active on the university website. As I record this message, the staff page is still active and she is still listed as an associate professor. Her areas of expertise listed include Africa, Latin America, and African American history. So there's no current word on whether or not she will officially resign from that position. She has cited some possible mental issues with the reasonings behind her stepping forward and assuming an identity that she had no rights to.
All right. This is just all I want to know. This is it. This is all I got for every single one of you, okay? If I showed you a picture of this woman and all I told you was her name was Jessica Krug, if I showed you a picture and I showed you the name, which one of y'all think she Puerto Rican? Which one of y'all think she Black? What about that picture plus that name says Black? And Gabe, I don't know if you watched any of like some of the videos and stuff that she had put out or anything else. Yo, man, who fell for this? And I'll tell you who fell for this. White people and Black dudes. I have noticed, at least from the academic, you know, and I'm fairly, you know, in touch with the academia world or whatever. But in academics, it sounds like a lot of Black and Latin women were trying to say, hey, I don't know about this one. And it was a bunch of Black dudes being like, man, y'all just hate. You know what I'm saying? Like that element is certainly at play. But white folks, it's y'all that I'm disappointed in. Y'all can't tell y'all's own? Like, for real. Like nobody was like, hold on, no. That's you ain't sneaking no white person past me. Right? Y'all don't recognize y'all's own people.
This isn't a Babe Ruth and Tua situation we got going on here.
No. Like, look, man, you ain't gonna slide Joe DiMaggio past me and tell me that his middle name is Andre. I'd have seen that. Like, I don't know. And the other thing about this, too, that's actually, like, cruel in a way, and I don't fully know how to spell it out, but that woman's work was good. Like, apparently, her scholarship is legit. Like her writing, apparently, and stuff were very, very good. She ain't even have to do this. Ma'am, you are white. They would have put you on just for being white. Everything could have worked out about the same for you, except it went too far. Now, Gabe, play the elevator music.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. So this story was so wild, so egregious, that we had to ask the listeners what was the most egregious lie that they've ever heard someone tell and continue to tell. We got some good ones. Our first one comes from Jake in LA.
So I have a cousin that does, like, you know, he does stand up and he does, like, improv and whatever, stuff like that. So he also, as you know, this is LA, he also worked as a waiter, right? To, like, you know, make some money. So he got a job at a cheesecake factory and, like, you know, he kind of thought this waiter job was, like, beneath him or whatever. So he thought it'd be funny to, like, put on an English accent in the interview, right? Like, I don't know, maybe thought it'd get him a leg up or something. But, like, he didn't just do that. He, like, came up this whole, like, backstory. He had, like, fake parents, whatever. Like, I don't know, like, how this got past the first, like, smell test of, like, you know, he had, like, a social security card, whatever. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So, like, so he's doing this, right? And, like, all the other waiters are, like, falling for it because, you know, I mean, right, like, that makes sense. But, like, I don't know, a few months into the job, he wants to holler at this girl and, you know, the first thing you're going to find out is that this whole thing is fake. So he's doing this for a long time. And so, like, the pretense of their whole thing is a lie, that he's got this accent, whatever. So eventually he comes clean to this woman, but, like, he still carries on with this lie at the restaurant. The entire time he works at this restaurant, I'm talking about years, multiple years, he works at this cheesecake factory in Orange County. He has this English accent. He has this whole fake backstory. Like, I don't know if he has, you know, ever makes friends there or whatever, or how many people he lets into this little circle that, like, oh, yo, by the way, I'm from, you know, Southern California. I've never even been to England before. But he carries on with this lie. And so not only does he date this woman, I went to their wedding and they have a baby. So moral of the story, lying works.
Wow. You ever gone on somebody's Facebook page and just seen a series of lies? Oh, man. I may have told you about the dude who bought $180 from me, and then I never heard from him again. And then, like, 10 years later, I caught up with him, and he said something about, it's been a while. I was like, yeah, it's been a while. You had my money. And he was like, yeah, I can't believe you thought that I would disappear, you know, just because I owed you, you know, because of the money. I'll have you know that, you know, a lot has changed since we talked. I gave my life to Christ. And I'm not a biblical scholar, but I just need to know where it says in the Bible that once you give your life to Christ, that he's responsible for paying off your debts. Like, I just personally don't believe that Jesus was like, all you're all square with Bomani now. He don't even really know me, you know? Like, I just can't, like, he just decided that we was all square at that point. But I had gone to his Facebook page at some point and I saw that he was married, but, like, the high school wasn't legit. Everything that I saw that was a piece of information on his Facebook page was a flat out lie. It was a flat out lie.
Oh, gosh. Well, we've got more flat out lies here for you. This next one comes from Jeff in Tulsa.
I was a freshman in college, and there was this girl in a sorority. She said that her family, like, lost her home in, like, a tornado that happened in Moore, like, the year before. It was a really big tornado. It was all over the news. So there was no reason not to believe her. And then, so we do a fundraiser for her. And then this girl comes out that, like, her father has cancer. So we do another fundraiser for that. Then her father ends up dying. And then we're all really sad about it. And then out of nowhere, like, her mother also gets cancer, according to her, or something other tragic. And we're all, like, nice people. So we're all, like, feeling really bad for her. We start another fundraiser. And out of nowhere, like, her aunt messages the sorority telling us that this chick who we've been doing all this fundraising for, who claims that she lost her home and both of her parents were dead. Actually, both her parents are still alive. There was never a tornado. And at the time we discovered all of this, she was lying also about herself having cancer. So obviously she gets kicked out of the sorority, but not out of the school. So I would still run into her from time to time, and she was still keeping up the lie that she had cancer.
Wow. Yo, sometimes you got to stop and ask yourself, is anybody's luck that bad?
I think she kind of like ran out of money making opportunities.
Yeah,
but I think I've got cancer. Your dog at that point?
Like, I've reached the level of cynicism where I'm like, really, your luck that bad? It just rained on your house, huh? Okay. Boy, you better not be wrong about that, though. Like, that's the whole thing about it is the risk calculus is so bad. Like, you just better not be wrong.
Unbelievable. This last one comes from Callum in Edinburgh.
So when I was in primary school, so like 8, 9 years old, this kid in my class told us that he'd been cast as Draco Malfoy in the second Harry Potter film. The first one had already come out. Apparently they were recasting it from that blonde kid, and he was going to be in the film. And he said that he was getting taken after school to go to film it. And he even took our Harry Potter trading cards and got them signed by the characters. I can't remember. Some of them he just signed them by the characters. Like, he signed it the groundskeeper or something like that. It was crazy nonsense. But we kept giving him it because we kept wanting to catch him out. The kicker, obviously they're recasting it, but they were going in a different direction because this kid was called Muhammad. And that was a bit of a giveaway. Me never showed up in the film. We never talked about why.
Okay, I've told you about the biggest lie I've had to keep up with. I told you about the time me and my homeboy was at the mall.
Think I remember this story, but do tell.
All right, so when I was in high school, my homeboy had this homegirl that was like really putting a full court press on me. And I wasn't like super with it, but I was kind of intrigued, but I was also a little bit shook because I was just kind of at that point in my journey. But anyway, I was at his house one night. It was the week of Thanksgiving, and she called him about something, and he was like, yo, she called looking for him. I'm like, what'd you tell her? He's like, I told her that you went to the Bayou Classic with your parents. I was like, oh, cool. So anyway, it's either the day after Thanksgiving or the Saturday. I can't remember which, but me and him are at the mall. And I look up and I see her. She's like a ways away. And I'm like, yo, turn around. Yo, turn around. And he didn't turn around fast enough. And so I just broke by myself. All right. But it's 1996. We don't have cell phones. We have no way to really get in touch with each other. We don't have a plan. I have just run away. And so I'm just walking around. I don't know what to do. And then maybe half hour, 45 minutes later, I don't know what. But I see the two of them. And I'm like, all right, man, I just got to catch this L, you know? Technically, I didn't lie to her. He told her that lie. I didn't ask him to lie to her. So anyway, I start walking up, and all of a sudden, I hear my homeboy go, hey, yo, Patrice! And it instantly hit me what was going on. And I was like, oh, hell yeah! When I got up on him, and my man was like, yo, this is Patrice, Bo's twin brother. And I instantly became Patrice. Patrice was jealous of Bo because Bo had all the girls, in case you were curious.
Oh, got it. I wonder how yes. Patrice feels about this.
Ah, yeah, it's great. Oh, no, I've told him this story. But, like, you know, that's the thing. You know my brother's name actually is Patrice. And so once that happened, I was like, oh, Cash Money. It's the greatest chemistry lie ever that's come together. And I saw her a few months later. We went to some party that she had. And she asked me, wait, are you Bo or Patrice? And I was like, yeah, it's Bo. I would hop in and out.
And those are the worst ones when you're hopping in and out and in. And
no, 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 no. I would hop in and out of being Bo and Patrice. I stayed in the lie. I wouldn't do that again, though. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. Gabe Bassett and Tarika Foster handle everything behind the scenes. Thank you, guys. Also, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Heather Kelly of The Washington Post. Check out her story on the kids getting too much screen time in Zoom school. Also, thank you to Doug Hanks of the Miami Herald. Check out his story about Miami not using American Airlines Arena for voting like the NBA would prefer. And thank you to Demisha Inman. Check out her story at The Griot on the George Washington history professor that told that big old lie. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.